Hey everybody, and welcome back for another deep dive with us. Today we're going to be looking at a really important Supreme Court case for tribal sovereignty, and it's called Bryan v. Itasca County.
Oh yeah, this is a classic one.
Yeah, and it all started over like less than $150 in taxes back in 1972 on a mobile home.
You know, a seemingly small dispute.
Yeah, you're thinking, wait a minute. How did this little tiny thing get all the way up to the Supreme Court?
Well, that's what makes it so fascinating, right? It reveals this much bigger power struggle between states and tribal authority.
Yeah.
And at its core, it boils down to this question. Can states tax Native Americans who are living on reservations?
Yeah. So let's set the stage here.
Okay.
We have Russell Bryan, who is a member of the Minnesota Chippewa tribe.
Right.
And he's living on reservation land.
Okay.
And then Itasca County, Minnesota, they decided to impose this personal property tax on his mobile home.
Sounds simple enough, right?
Yeah.
You would think so.
But it gets more complicated.
Yeah.
Because that land was held in trust by the federal government. Well,
which adds a whole other layer to this whole thing.
Right.
States can't just impose their own rules on trust land.
Right. So Itasca County, they thought they had this legal basis for the tax, and they were pointing to Public Law 280, which is from 1953.
Right. PL 280.
But Bryan, he argued that that law did not give states that type of power.
Didn't give them the authority.
Yeah. And of course, it goes all the way up.
Up to the highest court in the land.
Yeah. To settle the dispute.
And the court's decision
was
a resounding victory for tribal sovereignty.
Wow.
They unanimously sided with Bryan.
Right.
Declaring that states cannot tax Native Americans on reservations without clear permission from Congress.
Unanimous decision. That's a big deal.
Huge.
Yeah. That's really saying something.
Really sending a message.
But I think it's even more important to understand, like, the reasoning behind the decision.
Yeah. Why did they decide the way they did?
Yeah. What was their thinking there?
Well, they used three key arguments.
Okay.
The first one being this thing called the preemption doctrine. It's this cornerstone of federal Indian law.
Yeah.
You can think of it like a hierarchy.
Okay.
Federal law, it sits at the top.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Meaning that states can only intervene in tribal matters if Congress specifically says they can.
Oh, so they can't just point to some vague law.
Right, exactly.
And say, hey, we can tax.
It needs to be a clear green light.
A clear green light.
To Congress.
Yeah. Okay. The second argument, what was that about?
This one focused on the legislative intent of Public Law 280.
Okay.
So the court looked at the history of the law.
Right.
And determined that its main purpose was to deal with law enforcement issues.
Okay.
On some reservations, not to give states these sweeping taxing powers.
So Congress maybe gave them a key to deal with some things.
Right.
But they can't just start, you know, redecorating the house.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
And then the third argument, this one's super interesting.
Okay. I like the interesting one.
It's called statutory construction.
Okay.
Basically, when a law that affects tribes is open to interpretation.
The courts are obligated to interpret it.
Yeah.
In a way that favors the tribe.
So kind of like giving the benefit of the doubt.
Exactly.
To the tribe because of, you know, the history.
Given the complicated history.
Right.
Yeah. And this principle, this is powerful because it protects the tribes, prevents their interests from being undermined by, you know, vaguely worded laws.
So you've got these three pillars.
Three strong pillars.
Yeah. Preemption,
right.
Legislative intent,
yep.
And statutory construction.
It's a trifecta.
Yeah. It's like they built a fortress around tribal sovereignty.
Making it much harder for states to overstep.
Yeah. Okay. So now we've got this fortress.
Solid foundation.
Yeah. But this also has ripple effect.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It goes way beyond the facts of this case.
Right. It goes way beyond.
Especially when you look at something like Indian gaming.
Oh, yeah. The casinos.
Right. Big business.
Yeah. So how did a case about a mobile home in Minnesota lead to all these casinos all over the place? Well, because the Bryan decision said that states can't just impose taxes on tribal lands without that specific congressional approval.
Okay.
It created the space
for
tribes to assert more economic independence.
So if states can't tax them, that means all these businesses can flourish.
Exactly.
Including gaming.
Including gaming.
Yeah. Okay, so this has had a huge impact on a lot of tribes.
Too
allowing
sweet.
Them to, you know, generate revenue.
Right. Create jobs, fund services.
Wow.
Many tribes have been able to lift themselves out of poverty thanks to these economic opportunities.
That's amazing. It all started with a $150 dispute over taxes.
Who knew property taxes could be so groundbreaking?
Yeah. You never know.
Yeah.
But I think there's more to it, right? Like, this goes beyond just gaming.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What are some other things that have been impacted?
Well, it sets this precedent that limits state regulatory power over tribes in all sorts of areas.
Okay.
Like, imagine a state wants to impose environmental regulations on a tribal business operating on a reservation.
Okay, so, like, maybe the tribe wants to build a wind farm or something.
Exactly. The state might say, hey, you got to follow our rules.
Yeah.
But the tribe could say no.
Right.
And cite Bryan v. Itasca County.
Yeah.
Argued that the state doesn't have the authority
to impose those regulations
without clear direction from Congress.
So it's like a shield.
A legal shield,
yeah,
protecting them.
From the state.
From overreach.
So Bryan v. Itasca County basically reinforced this idea.
Reinforced.
That tribes have inherent sovereignty.
The right to govern themselves.
And their lands.
Without undue interference.
Okay. So we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have the legal arguments.
Yeah, real world stuff.
Real world implications.
What are some like key takeaways here?
What does this all mean for lawyers?
Yeah, what does this mean?
There's two major lessons from Bryan v. Itasca County that anyone working in this field should remember.
Okay, hit me with them.
First, always be on the lookout for explicit congressional authorization. Whenever a state claims the authority to regulate something on tribal lands.
So if a state says, we can do this because of X law.
Right.
You should check if Congress actually gave them that power.
Don't take their word for it.
Especially when it comes to tribal matters.
Scrutinize that language.
Yeah.
Look for that clear grant of authority.
And the second lesson.
Remember the power of Bryan's canon of construction?
You mean that principle where if the law is ambiguous, it has to be interpreted to benefit the tribe?
That's the one.
That's a good one.
That principle is a powerful tool.
It's like a secret weapon.
Right.
If the law is not clear, you can argue that the court should interpret it.
In a way that protects tribal interests.
Yeah.
Bryan v. Itasca County provides a masterclass,
yeah,
in how to use legal interpretation to safeguard tribal sovereignty.
It's not just some dusty old case.
It's a living, breathing set of principles.
It's still relevant today.
Absolutely.
So this case shaped the relationship between tribes and states.
Empowered tribes.
Helped them pursue economic development.
Yeah. Really just reaffirmed the importance of tribal sovereignty.
In the American legal landscape.
Wow.
Big stuff.
It is big stuff. And it leads to this question. What are the biggest challenges?
Ooh, good question.
That tribes face today in asserting their sovereignty?
Because the fight's not over.
Right.
Even with victories like Bryan v. Itasca County.
Yeah. We've just begun to scratch the surface here.
There's so much more to explore.
But we're going to have to save that conversation for our next deep dive.
You too.
But for now, keep that question in mind.
Yeah.
As you continue to learn about tribal sovereignty and its impact.
On Native American communities.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect place to pause for now.
I agree. It's really interesting to think about like the legal landscape back in the 1970s when this case landed in the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, Bryan was a huge turning point. But what was going on back then that made it so important?
Well, this was during something called the Termination Era.
The Termination Era. Yeah. And it was this period in U.S. history where the federal government was actually trying to dismantle tribal governments and assimilate Native Americans into, like, mainstream society.
Wow. So basically trying to, like, erase tribal identity and self-governance?
Yeah. And part of that was shifting jurisdiction over tribal lands to states.
Oh, wow.
Which led to a weakening of tribal rights and the loss of land and resources.
It's crazy to think that was happening not too long ago.
It's a dark chapter.
Yeah.
But it's really important context,
right,
for why Bryan v. Itasca County was such a landmark decision.
So the court ruling in favor of Bryan was kind of like pushing back against these termination policies.
Exactly. They were sending a message. Tribal sovereignty is not something you can just dismiss.
Right.
Can't be extinguished easily.
So thankfully that era is behind us. But I'm curious, what are some of the challenges that tribes still face today when it comes to asserting their sovereignty?
You're right. The fight's definitely not over.
Yeah.
Despite the progress, tribes still face a lot of obstacles.
Okay, so give me some examples.
Well, one big one is jurisdictional disputes.
Jurisdictional.
Yeah. It's like a three-way tug of war.
Oh, boy.
Between tribal, state, and federal governments over who gets to regulate what on tribal lands.
So you've got like all these overlapping jurisdictions.
Exactly. And it gets really complicated.
I bet.
You know, involving things like environmental protection.
Oh, yeah.
Law enforcement, taxation, natural resource management.
Sounds like a lawyer's dream.
Or nightmare.
Depending on how much you like untangling knots.
Yeah. But these issues have real consequences for tribes.
Right.
Affecting everything from economic development to access to justice.
So we've got jurisdictional disputes. What else?
Another challenge is limited resources.
Resources?
Yeah. A lot of tribes just lack the funding and infrastructure
okay.
to fully exercise their self-governing powers.
So it's not just about having the legal right.
Right.
But actually having the means to do it.
Exactly. And it can be a major hurdle.
Right.
Especially for tribes in remote areas or with limited economic opportunities.
Makes it tough to build strong institutions.
Yeah.
Provide services, assert their rights.
And we can't forget about the negative stereotypes and misconceptions out there.
Like the idea that tribes get special treatment.
Yeah. Or that tribal sovereignty threatens state or federal power.
Right.
These attitudes make it hard for tribes to be treated fairly and to have their voices heard.
So even with legal victories, like Bryan v. Itasca County, the fight continues.
It does. It's about recognizing the inherent rights of tribes to govern themselves,
right.
determine their own destinies.
And for us as lawyers, we have a responsibility to understand these issues.
Absolutely.
And advocate for our tribal clients.
And help build a more just and equitable future for Native American communities.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
And, you know, understanding this history really helps us grasp the challenges that tribes face today.
Oh, for sure.
Like we talked about the termination era.
Right. That really dark period.
Yeah. There's a specific case that shows just how devastating those policies were.
Oh, yeah.
What tribe are we talking about?
The Menominee Tribe of Wisconsin.
The Menominee Tribe.
Their experience really exemplifies how that policy backfired.
Okay, so what happened to them?
In 1954, Congress passed this act that terminated the Menominee Reservation in Wisconsin.
So they just lost everything overnight.
Yeah, federal recognition, their treaty rights, their land, all of it.
Wow, I can't imagine.
They went from being a sovereign nation to just another county in Wisconsin.
That's crazy.
It was really traumatic.
Yeah. So what were the consequences?
Most of their land was transferred to a private corporation.
So their ancestral lands were privatized?
It was called Menominee Enterprises, Inc.
Okay.
The idea was to promote economic development.
Right.
But the corporation struggled.
Oh, no.
The Menominee faced hardship.
Yeah.
High unemployment decline in their standard of living.
So termination actually made their lives worse.
It did.
Wow. It's sad how these policies that were supposed to be progress
right.
actually ended up causing so much harm.
It shows the importance of really considering the unique needs and rights of tribes.
Yeah, when you're making policy decisions.
But is there a happy ending to this story?
There is.
Oh, good.
After years of advocacy, the Menominee people were able to regain federal recognition.
Wow.
In 1973.
Okay.
Their reservation was reestablished.
That's amazing.
It was a major victory for the tribe and for tribal self-determination.
It's an incredible story of resilience.
Right.
They didn't give up.
They fought back.
And they won back their sovereignty.
It's truly inspiring.
Yeah. It shows that even with huge challenges,
right.
tribes can fight for their rights and reclaim their sovereignty. The Menominee story is powerful. It's a reminder that hope and justice can prevail.
Yeah.
But it also shows the lasting damage done by policies like termination.
For sure.
And we can't talk about termination without acknowledging the racism and cultural bias behind those policies.
Right.
It's like trying to understand a disease.
Exactly.
Without looking at the root cause.
You can treat the symptoms, but you won't cure the illness. Exactly. So what were some of the policies that were enacted during this era?
Well, the termination era, it spanned from the 1940s to the 1960s.
Okay.
And it was marked by all these federal policies.
Right.
Aiming to end the special legal status of tribes and dissolving their governments.
It was basically a systematic dismantling of tribal sovereignty.
Yeah.
Driven by racist beliefs.
Right.
About, you know, European culture being superior.
And it had devastating consequences.
Yeah.
One key piece of legislation was the Indian Relocation Act of 1956.
What did that do?
It encouraged Native Americans to leave reservations.
Okay.
And move to urban areas.
So basically forced migration.
It was often presented as a way to access better opportunities
right.
and to assimilate.
Yeah.
But in reality, it broke up tribal communities.
Right.
Weakened their ties to their land and culture.
It's just heartbreaking to think about the trauma and disruption that those policies caused.
Yeah.
What were some of the other tactics they used?
Another one was the termination of federal recognition.
Okay. So the government would just stop recognizing a tribe's sovereign status.
So basically, like, they didn't exist.
And their right to self-govern.
Wow.
Over 100 tribes were terminated.
100.
Resulting in the loss of millions of acres of land. And a big erosion of tribal sovereignty.
The scale of that is just mind-boggling.
And another policy was the transfer of jurisdiction over criminal and civil matters on tribal lands to states.
Wait, so Public Law 280, the law at the heart of the Bryan case,
yeah,
was actually part of this whole effort to undermine tribal sovereignty.
Yes. PL 280 was passed in 1953.
Right.
And it gave certain states jurisdiction over criminal offenses and civil disputes on reservations.
It sounds like a way to slowly take away their authority, right, and give the states more control.
It often led to confusion.
Yeah.
Conflict. Lack of accountability.
So it created this whole legal landscape that was hostile towards tribal sovereignty.
Exactly.
This is all really heavy stuff. It's clear that this was a dark time in our history.
And the effects are still felt today.
Absolutely.
But amidst all that darkness, we also see stories of resilience and hope.
Right.
Like the Menominee tribes fight to get their sovereignty back.
Exactly. And it's so important that we learn from the past and keep advocating for the rights of Native American communities.
This conversation has been so eye-opening.
It has.
I feel like I have a much deeper understanding of tribal sovereignty now.
Me too.
Both its history,
yeah,
and its challenges today.
Absolutely.
Now, before we move on, I want to go back to something you said earlier about racism being a driving force behind those policies.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's important to talk about that more.
You're absolutely right. We can't talk about termination without acknowledging the racism that fueled it.
It's like we said before, trying to understand a disease without looking at the root cause.
Right.
You can treat the symptoms, but you won't cure the illness.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we need to recognize that this was part of a bigger pattern of discrimination.
Yeah.
Against Native Americans in the U.S.
It was a deliberate attempt to assimilate them.
Often at the expense of their cultures and traditions.
It's that classic trope.
Right.
Of civilizing the savage.
Exact.
It's been used to justify colonialism and oppression for centuries.
We need to call out these racist ideologies.
Yeah.
And see how they still shape our perceptions of tribes.
So how do we dismantle these biases?
That's a good question.
And create a more just relationship with Native American communities?
I think education is key. We need to teach people about the true history.
Right.
The history that's often ignored or distorted.
Tell the whole story.
Challenge those stereotypes.
Right.
Create space for dialogue and understanding.
Break down those barriers.
Yeah.
Of mistrust and prejudice.
And recognize that we all have a role to play.
I love that.
In creating a more just and equitable future for Native American communities.
It's about building bridges, not walls.
Yes.
And it starts with listening to Native American voices.
Absolutely.
Allowing them to tell their own stories.
Share their truths.
This has been such a powerful conversation.
It has.
Thank you so much for sharing your insights.
My pleasure.
And helping us understand this history.
It's important to keep these conversations going.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I want to shift gears a bit.
Okay.
And move on to our final thoughts.
For this deep dive.
Yeah, we've covered a lot today.
A lot of ground.
The Bryan case.
The termination era.
The challenges to tribal sovereignty. It's been quite a whirlwind.
It has.
So what are your final thoughts?
One of the key takeaways for me is understanding tribal sovereignty as a lived experience.
Okay.
Not just a legal concept.
Right.
It's about recognizing the right of tribes to govern themselves.
Yeah.
Protect their lands and resources, preserve their cultures and traditions.
It's about self-determination.
Exactly.
Cultural survival.
And the right to chart their own course.
And as lawyers and as citizens.
As human beings.
We need to support tribes.
In their efforts to exercise their sovereignty.
Because their fight is our fight.
It's a fight for justice and equality.
I love that. Now, before we wrap up this section, I want to touch on one specific aspect of the Bryan v. Itasca County decision.
Okay. What aspect are you thinking about?
We talked about how it relates to tribal sovereignty and economic development.
Right.
But I'm curious about its broader legal implications.
Okay.
What are some of the key precedents?
One of the most significant takeaways from Bryan is its reaffirmation of federal supremacy in Indian affairs.
Ah, you mean the preemption doctrine.
Exactly.
Where federal law trumps state law when it comes to tribes.
Precisely. The Bryan court made it clear, states can't encroach on tribal sovereignty without explicit congressional authorization.
Okay.
And this has been cited in tons of cases since.
Yeah.
It's a cornerstone of federal Indian law.
Like a legal shield protecting tribes from state overreach.
Exactly.
And it's helped create a more favorable legal landscape.
For sure.
For tribal sovereignty.
But there's another important takeaway.
Yeah, what else?
The case emphasized the canons of statutory construction.
Right.
Particularly that ambiguities in laws.
Yeah.
Affecting tribes.
Right.
Must be resolved in favor of the tribe.
Right. Given the benefit of the doubt.
Exactly.
If it's unclear, they win.
The Bryan court made it clear this isn't just judicial discretion.
Right.
It's a fundamental rule of law.
Okay.
That has to be followed.
Interesting.
When interpreting statutes that impact tribal interests.
So it's a safeguard.
A safeguard.
Against taking away tribal rights.
Through loopholes or vague language.
Sure.
There's like a secret weapon.
Yeah.
If the law isn't crystal clear.
You can argue it.
The court should interpret it in a way that benefits the tribe.
Right.
Brian, Viatasca County is a masterclass.
I like those.
In how to use legal interpretation to safeguard tribal sovereignty.
Yeah.
It shows how this seemingly simple tax case.
Right.
Ended up having this huge impact on federal Indian law.
Wow.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. And its legacy is still shaping the relationship between tribes and states and the federal government.
It's a powerful reminder.
Of the power of precedent.
Yeah.
And how one single case can have ripple effects for years to come.
I agree. And speaking of ripple effects.
Okay.
I think it's time to shift our focus.
Right.
To the bigger question of how we as individuals and as a society can engage with tribal sovereignty in a more meaningful way.
Okay. I like that. That sounds like a good transition to our final thoughts.
That is the million-dollar question. How do we move beyond just acknowledging tribal sovereignty and actually support Native American communities in their efforts to exercise their self-governing rights? It's about creating a future where tribal sovereignty is truly respected and honored.
It can't just be checking off boxes.
Right.
It has to be about real relationships, understanding, and allyship.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Recognizing that tribal nations are not relics of the past.
Right. They're not.
They're vibrant communities that are shaping our present and future.
And their sovereignty is not a threat.
It's an opportunity.
For collaboration, innovation, and a more just society.
I love that.
Yeah.
What a powerful message. Yeah.
It's something we can all be a part of.
We can all support tribal sovereignty.
Even in small ways.
Absolutely.
It starts with education.
Learning about the history.
Right.
The legal framework. The challenges they face.
But it goes even further than that.
What do you mean?
Like we can engage with tribal communities directly.
Okay.
Attend their events.
Support their businesses.
Yeah.
Amplify their voices.
Advocate for policies that uphold their sovereignty.
Those are all great ideas.
And challenge the ones that don't.
It's about building those bridges of understanding and respect.
Yeah.
And recognizing that we all benefit from a world where tribal sovereignty is fully realized.
This deep dive has been such a journey.
It really has.
We've covered so much.
The Bryan case, the termination era, the challenges today.
It's been a whirlwind of history and law.
It highlights the power of a single legal case to create lasting change.
A dispute over less than $150 in property taxes.
And it sparked this huge shift.
Yeah. It shows that every case, every legal argument has the potential to shape our future.
That's why it's so important for lawyers to be informed,
yeah.
to be passionate about justice, and to use their skills to make a difference.
Well said. I am so inspired to keep learning about these issues.
Me too.
And to do my part to support tribal sovereignty.
It's a cause worth fighting for.
I think that's the perfect place to end it.
I agree.
Thank you so much for being here today and sharing your expertise with us.
The pleasure was all mine. I really enjoyed discussing this.
And to everyone listening, we encourage you to keep exploring these issues.
Challenge your own assumptions.
Yeah.
Be a voice for justice and equality.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Bryan Viatasca County and the fight for tribal sovereignty. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp and those hearts open to a more just world.